理课堂听 class.com。
College English Test, Band 4. Part 3. Listening Comprehension.
Section A. Directions. In this section, you will hear 8 short conversations and 2 long conversations. At the end of each conversation, 1 or more questions will be asked about what was said.Both the conversation and the questions will be spoken only once. After each question, there will be a pause. During the pause, you must read the 4 choices marked A, B, C, and D, and decide which is the best answer. Then mark the corresponding letter on answer sheet 2 with a single line,through the center. Now let's begin with the 8 short conversations.
Question 11.
I think the hostess really went out of her way to make the party a success.
Yes, the food and drinks were great, but if only we had known a few of the other guests.
What did the 2 speakers say about the party?
Question 12.
How do you like the new physician who replaced Dr. Andrews?
He may not seem as agreeable or as thorough as Dr. Andrews, but at least he doesn't keep patients waiting for hours.
What can we infer from the woman's answer?
Question 13.
Tom must be in a bad mood today. He hasn't said half a dozen words all afternoon.
Oh, really? That's not like the Tom we know.
What does the man imply?
Question 14.
Do you have the seminar schedule with you? I'd like to find out the topic for Friday.
I gave it to my friend, but there should be copies available in the library. I can pick one up for you.
What does the man promise to do?
Question 15.
I wonder if you could sell me the psychology textbooks. You took the course last semester, didn't you?
As a matter of fact, I already sold them back to the school bookstore.
What do we learn from the conversation?
Question 16.
Can you believe it? Jessie told her boss he was wrong to have fired his marketing director.
Yeah, but you know Jessie. If she has something in mind, everyone will know about it.
What does the woman mean?
Question 17.
We've got 3 women researchers in our group, Mary, Betty, and Helen. Do you know them?
Sure. Mary's active and sociable. Betty's the most talkative woman I've ever met. But guess what? Helen's just the opposite.
What do we learn from the woman's remark about Helen?
Question 18.
Jimmy said that he was going to marry a rich French businesswoman.
Don't be so sure. He once told me that he had bought a big house, yet he's still sharing an apartment with Mark.
What does the man imply?
Now you'll hear two long conversations. Conversation 1. Hello, Gary. How are you?
Fine. And yourself?
Can't complain. Did you have time to look at my proposal?
No, not really. Can we go over it now?
Sure. I've been trying to come up with some new production and advertising strategies. First of all, if we want to stay competitive, we need to modernize our factory. New equipment should have been installed long ago.
How much will that cost?
We have several options, ranging from $100,000 all the way up to $500,000.
Okay. We'll have to discuss these costs with finance.
We should also consider human resources. I've been talking to personnel as well as our staff at the factory.
And what's the picture?
We'll probably have to hire a couple of engineers to help us modernize the factory.
What about advertising?
Marketing has some interesting ideas for television commercials.
TV? Isn't that a bit too expensive for us? What's wrong with advertising in the papers, as usual?
Quite frankly, it's just not enough anymore. We need to be more aggressive in order to keep ahead of our competitors.
Will we be able to afford all this?
I'll look into it, but I think higher costs will be justified. These investments will result in higher profits for our company.
We'll have to look at the figures more closely. Have finance draw up a budget for these investments.
All right. I'll see to it.
Questions 19 to 22 are based on the conversation you have just heard. Question 19. What are the two speakers talking about? Question 20. What does the woman say about the equipment of their factory? Question 21. What does the woman suggest about human resources? Question 22. Why does the woman suggest advertising on TV? Conversation 2.
Sir, you've been using the online catalog for quite a while. Is there anything I can do to help you?
Well, I've got to write a paper about Hollywood in the 30s and 40s, and I'm really struggling. There are hundreds of books, and I just don't know where to begin.
Your topic sounds pretty big. Why don't you narrow it down to something like, the history of the studios during that time.
You know, I was thinking about doing that, but more than 30 books came up when I typed in movie studios.
You could cut that down even further by listing the specific years you want. Try adding 1930s or 1940s or maybe Golden Age.
Golden Age is a good idea. Let me type that in. Hey, look. Just 6 books this time. That's a lot better.
Oh, another thing you might consider. Have you tried looking for any magazine or newspaper articles?
No, I've only been searching for books.
Well, you can look up magazine articles in the Reader's Guide to Periodical Literature. And we do have the Los Angeles Times available over there. You might go through their indexes to see if there's anything you want.
Okay. I think I'll get started with these books, and then I'll go over the magazines.
If you need any help, I'll be over at the reference desk.
Great. Thanks a lot.
Questions 23 to 25 are based on the conversation you have just heard. Question 23. What is the man doing? Question 24. What does the librarian think of the topic the man is working on? Question 25. Where can the man find the relevant magazine articles?
Section B. Directions. In this section, you will hear 3 short passages. At the end of each passage, you will hear some questions. Both the passage and the questions will be spoken only once. After you hear a question, you must choose the best answer from the 4 choices marked A, B, C, and D. Then mark the corresponding letter on the answer sheet with a single line through the center.
Passage 1. Unless you have visited the southern United States, you probably have never heard of kudzu. Kudzu, as any farmer in the South will sadly tell you, is a super-powered weed. It is a strong climbing plant. Once it gets started, kudzu is almost impossible to stop. It climbs to the tops of the tallest trees. It can cover large buildings. Whole barns and farmhouses have been known to disappear from view. Wherever it grows, its thick, twisting stems are extremely hard to remove. Kudzu was once thought to be a helpful plant. Originally found in Asia, it was brought to America to help protect the land from being swallowed by the sea. It was planted where its tough roots, which grow up to 5 feet long, could help hold back the soil. But the plant soon spread to places where it wasn't wanted. Farmers now have to fight to keep it from killing other plants. In a way, kudzu is a sign of a labor shortage in the South. Where there is no one to work the fields, kudzu soon takes over. The northern United States faces no threat from kudzu. Harsh winters kill it off. The plant loves the warmth of the South, but the South surely doesn't love it. If someone could invent some use for kudzu and remove it from southern farmland, his or her fortune would be assured.
Questions 26 to 28 are based on the passage you have just heard. Question 26.
What do we learn about kudzu from the passage?
Question 27.
What will happen if the fields are neglected in the southern United States?
Question 28.
Why isn't kudzu a threat to the northern United States? Passage 2. The word university comes from the Latin word universitas, meaning the whole. Later, in Latin legal language, universitas meant a society or corporation. In the Middle Ages, the word meant an association of teachers and scholars. The origins of universities can be traced back to the 12th to 14th centuries. In the early 12th century, long before universities were organized in the modern sense, students gathered together for higher studies at certain centers of learning. The earliest centers in Europe were at Bologna in Italy, founded in 1088. Other early centers were set up in France, the Czech Republic, Austria and Germany from 1150 to 1386. The first universities in Britain were Oxford and Cambridge. They were established in 1185 and 1209, respectively. The famous London University was founded in 1836. This was followed by the foundation of several universities, such as Manchester and Birmingham, which developed from provincial colleges. It was in the 1960s that the largest expansion of higher education took place in Britain. This expansion took three basic forms. Existing universities were enlarged, new universities were developed from existing colleges, and completely new universities were set up. In Britain, finance for universities comes from three sources. The first and the largest source is grants from the government. The second source is fees paid by students, and the third one is private donations. All the British universities except one receive some government funding. The exception is Buckingham, which is Britain's only independent university.
Questions 29 to 31 are based on the passage you have just heard. Question 29.
What did the word universitas mean in the Middle Ages?
Question 30.
Why was the 1960s so significant for British higher education?
Question 31.
What is the main financial source for British universities? Passage 3. One of the biggest problems in developing countries is hunger. An organization called Heifer International is working to improve this situation. The organization sends farm animals to families and communities around the world. An American farmer, Dan West, developed the idea for Heifer International in the 1930s. Mr. West was working in Spain, where he discovered a need for cows. Many families were starving because of a civil war in that country. So Mr. West asked his friends in the United States to send some cows. The first heifer animals were sent in 1944. Since that time, more than 4 million people in 115 countries have had better lives because of heifer animals. To receive a heifer animal, families must first explain their needs and goals. They must also make a plan which will allow them to become self-supporting. Local experts usually provide training. The organization says that animals must have food, water, shelter, health care, and the ability to reproduce. Without them, the animals will not remain healthy and productive. Heifer International also believes that families must pass on some of their success to others in need. This belief guarantees that each person who takes part in the program also becomes a giver. Every family that receives a heifer animal must agree to give that animal's first female baby to other people in need. Families must also agree to pass on the skills and training they receive from Heifer International. This concept helps communities become self-supporting.
Questions 32 to 35 are based on the passage you have just heard. Question 32.
What does the speaker tell us about Mr. West?
Question 33.
What is the ultimate goal of Heifer International?
Question 34.
What are families required to do after they receive support from Heifer International?
Question 35.
What is the major achievement of Heifer International?
Section C. Directions. In this section, you will hear a passage three times. When the passage is read for the first time, you should listen carefully for its general idea. When the passage is read for the second time, you are required to fill in the blanks numbered from 36 to 43 with the exact words you have just heard. For blanks numbered from 44 to 46, you are required to fill in the missing information. For these blanks, you can either use the exact words you have just heard, or write down the main points in your own words. Finally, when the passage is read for the third time, you should check what you have written. Now listen to the passage.
It's difficult to imagine the sea ever running out of fish. It's so vast, so deep, so mysterious. Unfortunately, it's not bottomless. overfishing, coupled with destructive fishing practices, is killing off the fish and ruining their environment. Destroy the fish, and you destroy the fishermen's means of living. At least 60% of the world's commercially important fish species are already overfished, or fished to the limit. As a result, governments have had to close down some areas of sea to commercial fishing. Big, high-tech fleets ensure that everything in their path is pulled out of water. Anything too small, or the wrong thing, is thrown back either dead or dying. That's an average of more than 20 million metric tons every year. When you consider that equals a quarter of the world catch, you begin to see the size of the problem. In some parts of the world, for every kilogram of prawns caught, up to 15 kilograms of unsuspecting fish and other marine wildlife die, simply for being in the wrong place at the wrong time. True, some countries are beginning to deal with this problem, but it's vital we find rational ways of fishing before every ocean becomes a dead sea. It would make sense to give the fish enough time to recover, grow to full size and reproduce, then catch them in a way that doesn't kill other innocent sea life.
Now the passage will be read again.
It's difficult to imagine the sea ever running out of fish. It's so vast, so deep, so mysterious. Unfortunately, it's not bottomless. Overfishing, coupled with destructive fishing practices, is killing off the fish and ruining their environment. Destroy the fish, and you destroy the fishermen's means of living. At least 60% of the world's commercially important fish species are already overfished, or fished to the limit. As a result, governments have had to close down some areas of sea to commercial fishing. Big high-tech fleets ensure that everything in their path is pulled out of water. Anything too small, or the wrong thing, is thrown back either dead or dying. That's an average of more than 20 million metric tons every year. When you consider that equals a quarter of the world catch, you begin to see the size of the problem. In some parts of the world, for every kilogram of prawns caught, up to 15 kilograms of unsuspecting fish and other marine wildlife die, simply for being in the wrong place at the wrong time. True, some countries are beginning to deal with this problem, but it's vital we find rational ways of fishing. before every ocean becomes a dead sea. It would make sense to give the fish enough time to recover, grow to full size and reproduce, then catch them in a way that doesn't kill other innocent sea life.
Now the passage will be read for the third time.
It's difficult to imagine the sea ever running out of fish. It's so vast, so deep, so mysterious. Unfortunately, it's not bottomless. Overfishing, coupled with destructive fishing practices, is killing off the fish and ruining their environment. Destroy the fish, and you destroy the fishermen's means of living. At least 60% of the world's commercially important fish species are already overfished, or fished to the limit. As a result, governments have had to close down some areas of sea to commercial fishing. Big, high-tech fleets ensure that everything in their path is pulled out of water. Anything too small, or the wrong thing, is thrown back either dead or dying. That's an average of more than 20 million metric tons every year. When you consider that equals a quarter of the world catch, you begin to see the size of the problem. In some parts of the world, for every kilogram of prawns caught, up to 15 kilograms of unsuspecting fish and other marine wildlife die, simply for being in the wrong place at the wrong time. True, some countries are beginning to deal with this problem, but it's vital we find rational ways of fishing before every ocean becomes a dead sea. It would make sense to give the fish enough time to recover, grow to full size and reproduce, then catch them in a way that doesn't kill other innocent sea life.
This is the end of listening comprehension.